might be the last binary subtraction you're doing your whole life. So enjoy it. Stop at 2:20. Stop it. I'm not gonna spend time on this because it really doesn't matter. The biggest mistake I think I've seen for subtraction is when you need to borrow. So for example, here 0 minus 1, you can't perform the operation, and so you need to borrow from the left. And so crossing off, basically borrowing 1 from this 1, 1, 0. And so some people cross off the whole thing, and that's a mistake. You need to borrow from the left of the digit that needs to borrow. Okay? And so, yeah. Not more to say about this. Unless there's questions. Okay. So let's continue. After we talked about those, about binary and about the, you know, building blocks and ands and ors and nots, we talked about the, you know, we made a whole processor. We said that, you know, the processor is basically made out of all these different blocks. And so the processor is also interprets these very simple instructions so that, you know, when you have a programming language, the compiler will break the complicated instructions into simple instructions. And we said that, you know, the computer is made out of the processor and memory. The memory holds information. It sends, you know, the processor gets its data from memory. And we said that there's also sometimes circuits that perform mathematical operations that are separate. The processor sometimes has a coprocessor that performs, you know, for example, the graphical interface with computers sometimes has a separate processor because graphics take so much computation. There's always a coprocessor that does math, and so that, you know, the processor can perform faster. And so we said that, you know, the basic machine language is based on this kind of scheme where you have the accumulator, and which is just a special variable. It's a special place, a little piece of memory inside the processor that the processor can access very fast. It has these ors and ands and nots, and then it takes variables from A to P, and it can take values from these variables and perform the simple operations in that it needs to perform. And so we said that these are all the, in our 7-bit instruction set, these are the only operations that are legal. We can do all these operations. B is one of these. It's A through P. So you have 4 bits that tell us what the variable is, and we have 3 bits that tell us what the actual operation is. And so we said that, you know, no matter what our, you know, our instruction is, no matter how complicated it is, we can always break it down into smaller instructions, more simpler instructions. And we had also, you had a homework where there's expression trees. You had to find the formula for the expression tree. Then you had to find the simple machine language instructions that would perform that instruction. And so it is complicated to break down the, you know, big instructions into smaller steps. But it's doable, and that is what the compilers do. And so, you know, each instruction, the processor has a clock. For each clock cycle, one instruction is executed. And so the machine language program is basically made out of bytes. So you see here that you have a 7-bit instruction set. You could have an 8-bit instruction set. Each 7 bits are one instruction, and so we can say that if it was 8 bits, it would be a byte, and so each byte is going to be one instruction. It can be interpreted as an instruction. And so basically everything that a computer does is made out of, it's broken down into these smaller, simpler instructions. And we learn to take machine language and say, turn it into formulas, into logical formulas. So we didn't learn so much to take a complicated formula and break it down into simpler steps. It's more taking the instruction and making the formula. And that is what we're going to do right now. So you're given a sequence of instructions in machine language. And the question is, what will be the accumulator after all these instructions are run? And this is one of the problems, this kind of problem will be, it was on the midterm, it will be on the final. So, yeah. Accumulator, so N is going to be not A. Then we store B in the accumulator, and then we say accumulator equals whatever was in the accumulator, which is B, or whatever was in N, which is not A. So it's going to be B or not A or B. They're the same thing. Okay, any questions? It's very hard to ask a question, I think, if you answered a question wrong that, you know, 99% of the people got right or something. But, you know, you should ask, because, you know, it's okay. Some people answer randomly. Okay, and then after that, we said, okay, well, we can move forward, and we can say, okay, we're going to just focus on programming. And a big part of computer science is programming. Most people think that computer science is only programming, designing programs that will solve problems. But that's just, you know, part of it. It's a very significant part, but it's not. And so, you know, we talked about the hierarchy. We said that, you know, computer science is all about reduction. And so, we talked about this kind of hierarchy where at the lowest level we have bits, then we build ands, nots, and ors, very simple logic gates. We have Boolean algebra with ands and nots and ors, and putting them together, making more complicated formulas. And then we said that we have English. You know, we have very complicated applications that are made using programming languages. And in the middle here, we said that the machine language is the layer that connects very simple, basic operations, ands, nots, and ors, or very simple, you know, Boolean algebra with the programming languages. And we said that we even had this kind of chart where physical bits can be, they're actually zeros and ones. They can be high or low voltage. Low voltage would be a zero. High voltage would be a one. We can also use water pressure, we can use kinetic energy, we can use all kinds of things. You guys have had to think about a bit, inventing a bit. Yeah.
If you were sort of like writing a compiler, how
you have to deal with machine language. Just tell it how to translate the instructions into machine language. The basic logic gates, ands, ors, and nots, there's also nors, which is a not an or. You can use different ones here. We had the equal gate. We have if then else gates. You had on the midterm, you know, odd 10 gates, which is made out of, and I tell you what it's made out of, and then you can build it out of ands, nots, and ors. The machine language you talked about, which is made of the 7-bit instructions. We have higher level languages. Here we had Scratch, actually. We learned how to program in Scratch. You can also have Java or C. And then using those high-level languages, you can build software libraries that, you know, graphics library, you don't have to, if you want to make a graphic application, you don't have to start from scratch. You can use stuff that other people have done and use that and save time for your application. And so we also talked about how people can't really interact with programming with machine language with the computer directly, and they need programming languages. Programming languages are a very good compromise between English and what the computer can understand. And in college, I had to take a class on machine language, so we had to program in machine language. It's very hard and very hairy, and it gets very long and complicated. It's much nicer to program in Java or Scratch even. So you guys didn't have to write, move this stuff from the accumulator to whatever. You can just drag the blocks and, think of things on a higher level. And so that's nice. And so, compilers are very important because compilers take this high-level language and translate it into something that a computer can understand. The computer doesn't understand, cats and blocks and things like that. It needs to know what that means. And so there's also interpreters, which just compilers, what they do is they translate from higher level language into lower level, into machine language. Interpreters just take the high level language and just execute it. And we had expression trees are a big part of that because expression trees tell the compiler compilers create the expression trees, which tell them, which operations need to be performed first. And so, this was the interpreter. The interpreter can get some code, and it just makes it run. And the compiler actually takes code and turns it into machine language. And it's actually a program that turns a program into another program. So that's kind of interesting. And so here, you're given an expression tree, this one, and you have to figure out what the formula is for the expression tree. The options are A, not A, B, B, C, not A or B, D, not B or A, E, A and B. Is we're going bottom up. We have not A, and we or that to B. So this is the right answer. Okay, any questions? No? Okay, and then we also talked about, this was a weird chapter where we had contradictions and paradox, and we talked about that, oxymorons and things that contradict themselves. And we talked about the halting problem and how, it's impossible to make a program that will take another program and decide if it's that program actually stops or not. We as people, we can look at a program and figure out if it can stop. Where, you know, you have the halting problem, I give you a script, I ask you for which values, does it stop? And so you guys can figure that out, and you know, people can figure that out, but computers can't. And there are actually a few interesting problems here. Russell's paradox was talking about the barber, and we saw that, you know, if you make a statement like this, where, you know, the barber has to shave every man who does not shave himself, we saw that if the barber's a man, it's very hard to find a person that would fit into that. It's kind of a self-contradicting statement. And we also talked about the problem with saying this statement cannot be proven, or this statement cannot be proven, because if it's true, then you can't prove it, and if it's false, then you can prove something that's false. And so this kind of country, or, you know, this statement is false. If it's false, it's true. If it's true, it's false. So you can't, you know, you can't satisfy. It's self-contradicting kind of statement. We also talked about the weird stuff where, you know, numbers, and if there's more integers than, there's more fractions than decimals, and I'm not going to go over this. You know, we said that the infinity of the set of decimal numbers is actually bigger than the set of fractions. And we also talked about random bits. We talked about quantum mechanics and how we can use random bits. We can generate random bits by flipping a coin. We can generate random numbers by making them out of random bits. We also talked about probabilities, and we said that if an event has a probability p, you need 1 over p tries before that event happens, on average. And so we had a few problems like this. You know, given an event that has a certain probability, figure out the probability and then flip it to find the average number of times that you need to repeat the experiment for the event to happen. And also, we had for what values will a given loop halt? So those are two problems. They're both on the final. We're going to do a few examples right now. So here's the list. Your list is 4, 8, 2, 9, 4, 6, 7. And the question is, if we pick a number from the list repeatedly, how many times on average do we pick before getting an even number? And your options are A, 1 over 7 times, B, 5 over 7, C, 1.4 times, D, 0.5 times, E, 7 times. Again, the question is not what is the probability of picking an even number. The question is how many times you need to pick, on average, you need to pick before getting an even number. Of what you're interested in. In this case, we're interested in getting an even number. What's the probability of getting an even number if we randomly pick numbers from the list? 5 out of 7. Then, to find out the number of times we need to repeat it, we need to flip that probability. So 7 over 5, that's going to be the average, the number of times we need to repeat it. 7 divided by 5 is 1.4. And so that is your answer. 1.4 times on average. We need to pick a number to get an even number. Okay? Any questions? There's been a lot on homework 4. The question is, so you have a script. It says set count to question mark. Repeat until count is bigger than 20. Play sound, pop, and wait. Change count by -1. And the question is, for what values of question mark does the script, scratch script eventually halt? A, all values, always halt. B, no values, always loops. C, all numbers smaller than 20. D, all numbers larger than 20. E, all integers larger than or equal to 20. I will stop at 1:30. Confusion point for this kind of problem is this is a keyword eventually. Some people see think of numbers that never go into the loop and they think that they're bad numbers, but they're good numbers because if you have a number that's bigger than 20, like 21, it's not going into the loop at all and it stops. So that's a good, those are good numbers. We want those numbers. So for all numbers that are bigger than 20, the script doesn't even go into the loop. So those are good. Let's see what happens for numbers that are smaller than 20. Let's see 19. For 19, this condition is not met. It's going into the loop. It's subtracting 1. It's making it 18. It's still not met. Continues making it 17, 16, 15, and so on. For all numbers that are smaller than 20, this you know, staying in the loop makes the thing worse. It brings it further and further away from the condition that will stop the program. And so only numbers that are a bit larger than 20 will work. Only for numbers that are larger than 20, this script will halt. Okay, any questions? Okay, so the another chapter we talked about was algorithms, and we said that an algorithm is a method for solving a problem. We showed that on socks, matching the socks after you do your laundry, how there's better methods and there's worse methods. And so, you know, we saw how some of them were better than other ones. We definitely want algorithms that are good and fast, so, you know, faster is better. And we one skill here was counting the number of gates in a multi-level logic block. So if I give you, you know, some kind of, you know, the monster K gate is made out of whatever, you know, however many equal gates and however many, you know, AND gates, and you have to count all the ANDs, NOTs, and ORs that monster gate is made out of. And that will be actually on the fine. So if you have any questions on that one, we don't have an example here today, but There will be, I will go over that during the review.
Is there one on the sample final?
There is one on the sample final. The actual final is exactly like the sample final. Like, I don't think I'm even going to change the order of problems, just the numbers changed. So if you know how to do the problems in sample final, I will make sample answers too. And please don't bring calculators. Everything you want to bring, print out. And you can even bring your sample final, your sample answers.
We're not allowed to use calculators?
Calculators you can use, not computers. Did
computers.
I say calculators?
Yeah. You said calculators.
Yeah, okay. No, you can use calculators.
I think I will give extra credit.
If you do the sample final, you'll get full credit. If you, the extra credit is going to be extra. And so we also talked about decision problems on lists. We had a whole lecture where we went over a whole bunch of lists. We asked, we asked questions like, is X is a certain number of the median? Is the sum of all the numbers divisible by 5? Is a product? And there's a fast way and a slow way. We saw that for the median, we could either sort the list and, look in the middle, or we could count how many numbers are smaller than X, how many numbers are bigger than X. If those numbers are equal, we said that that's the median. If not, that was not the median. And so for all these kinds of problems, there's usually a fast way and a slow way to solve.
So what about this problem?
So is this, this is one problem that you could have. You're given a list of numbers, and you're asked, is the median 688, and is the max 976? Stopping at 2. Not the max, because 984 is bigger than the max. So 984 is a max. So the max is definitely no. Now you have to choose between A and C. And I think I counted how many numbers are smaller than 688, and there's 12 that are smaller. And so because there's 25 numbers, there's 12 that are smaller, 12 that are bigger, and 688 is the number in the middle of the list. Okay? Another kind of problem, I don't think we're going to do this one, is the sum divisible by 5, and is the product divisible by 5? And the sum, we said that an efficient way of doing it is to just focus on the last, because being divisible by 5 means your the last digit is 0 or 5. So we don't have to add up all the numbers. We can just add up just the last digit of all the numbers. And more than that, we can make it more efficient by skipping numbers that are divisible by 5, like this one or this one or this one. And we're just going to add up the last digit of all the numbers that are not divisible by 5. And if that number is divisible by 5, then the sum of all the numbers is going to be divisible by 5. If not, it won't be. Product is really easy. Is the product divisible by 5? Yes. Why is that? Because there's 695 is one number. So this number is 5 times something. So then if we multiply all the numbers, it's enough that one number will be divisible by 5. That'll make the whole product divisible by 5. Let's see. What is this one to? This one is similar to one of the problems in the final in that you know, you're given mystery routines. You have this problem in the homework, and you have to match them with what they do. And so you have a list. In this case, you're given a list. Normally, you're not going to be given the list. Your deck, your list, is 78, 10, 65, 72, 31, 40, 27, 49, 31, and 96. And what does the script say, and why? So this script will say A, yes, because it answers the question, is the length 10? B, no, because it answers, is the sum 10? C, no, because it answers, is the first element 10? D, yes, because it asks, does it contain number 10? E, no, because it asks, are all elements in the list equal to 10? I guess I'll read the script. Set I to 1. Repeat length of deck, yeah. Okay, sure. So when I receive who am I, which is your subroutine, set I to 1, repeat length of deck, which is your list. And what you repeat is, if item I of deck equals 10, say yes and stop the script, and you also have change I by 1 inside the repeat. And outside of the repeat, you have say no and stop script. So this weird thing is an I. I'll stop at 3. We go through the whole list, and for each element, I will be our item. It will be 1 for the first item, 2 for the second item, and so on. We repeat for each element of the deck. We repeat length of deck because that's how many elements are in the list. And then we say, if item I of deck equals 10, so we look at the first element. We say yes and stop the script. So if at any point, if it finds 10 anywhere in the list, it will say yes, and it will stop the script. And so in this case, it's going over the list. I is 1. Item I of a deck is 78 because that's the first element in your list. And so it's going to see if item I of deck is equal to 10. It's not. It's going to continue. It's going to change I by 1. It's going to make it 2. And it still hasn't gone through the whole list. So it says, if item I of deck is 10, is the second item 10? It is. Yes. It says yes, and it stops the script. And so it's answering, does the list contain number 10?
Okay. Any questions? Okay. And so we also talked about how we can analyze how well an algorithm does and how good it is or how long it will take to run by comparing it to singing songs and comparing it to, you know, imagine that the song has n verses. What is this going to, you know, is it going to be a big O of n? Is it going to grow like n? Is it going to bring up like n squared? The number of syllables is a pain to figure out exactly how many there are, and that's why we introduced the big O notation. And so, I hope I have that slide. The common gross ones are, if you have a dreidel, if all your verses are approximately the same size, that's a big O of N. If you have each verse adds something to the previous verse, you're going to have big O of N squared. Like the old McDonald's song that adds, for each verse, it adds a new animal. If you have some kind of counting and your verses look like they're approximately the same size, that's going to be big O of N log N. And if your song looks like each verse adds something to the previous one, but if there's also counting, that will add a log N to the big O of N squared log N. Okay? And so you can look at the song and you can decide two things. One, do the verses grow in size? If the verses are all approximately the same size, it's going to be big O of N. If the verses grow, it's going to be big O of N squared. Second question is there counting involved? If there is counting involved, you know, add a log N to the big O.
And that's what it's saying. It's a constant size verse for big O of N. For big O of N log N, each verse contains the next higher number, or maybe increasing or decreasing. For the N squared, each verse is a constant amount bigger than the next verse. And N squared is just like N squared log N is just like N, but it adds counting to it. And so we also talked about exponential, using the word exponentially the right way. The good way is saying the phrase that you're using shows some kind of trend of growth over time. The bad way of using it, the incorrect way, is just comparing two points and saying one is a lot better than the other. And so
we talk about NP complete problems, which are easy to check but very hard to solve. But it's easy to check a solution. And so I'm not going to do this one. We talk about Google and how Google uses this graph kind of view of the internet. We talked a little bit about graphs. We talked about what sources are, what sinks are, path, cycle, connected components. We talked about how a node is reachable from a node X is reachable from node Y. If there is a path, if there is a series of nodes that link Y to X, that between X and Y. And so it doesn't need to be a neighbor. It can be, you just have to find a sequence of nodes that, you know, link X to Y. And so for a given graph, this is a skill that, you know, I hope you all have, and it's going to be in the final, find the sources, sinks, cycles, stores, nodes that are reachable from other nodes. This one. We talked about sorting and how sorting helps us a lot. You know, as you probably saw in the homework, there were 4 problems, and if you know, solve the problem on an unsorted list, it takes, let's say, big O n squared. Solving it on a sorted list usually helps a lot. It can even do a difference as big as between you know, big O of N on an unsorted list and N big O of 1 on a sorted list. We had a binary search. We talked about that. We said that if you have a set of numbers, And if you want to find one number, that's log of n, because you can always split the problem in half. We had quicksort, which is the fastest sorting algorithms, and we also talk about heuristics, which are, you know, if sometimes there's not a method of solving a problem, it's just, you know, we notice things in the problem that can help us get a better solution or stuff like that. And we also had these kinds of problems where you get a problem, you have the problem or question on a list that is has n elements and integers, for example. How much does it take on an unsorted list? How much does it take on a sorted list? And the difficulty with this kind of problem is that you're not given the list. You can't actually run, you know, systematically over the list. But just think the worst case, you know, you're given the worst list, how long will it take? You know, and for example, finding an element in an unsorted list will you can find it in 2 steps, but you might have to go through the whole list to find that element. And so that is why in an unsorted list, finding an element is big O of n. Sorted is big O of log n, because you can always split it in half, look in the middle, throw away half of the list that's not good, and so on. And so you have all these kinds of all these problems, and you actually have also a problem on the final where you have to find out how long does it take for 4 operations to be solved in the sorted list, and how long does it take on the final.
I believe the number that comes out is.
We talk about codes and compression. We said that compression makes things smaller. We show that video, sometimes compression is loses information, and videos can look very weird, and almost we can't, we're not able to watch it. We talk about Huffman coding and how we can take a text and make it smaller. And so one problem will be the Huffman code. We talk about parallel computers and how computers have gotten faster and faster and faster, and that speed will stop at some point because of the speed of light, which is a constant. We need to add more and more computers working together to make, you know, problems being solved faster. And so, we saw how Google actually uses that, giving the query to multiple computers, solving it at the same time and answering very fast. We talk about computers that learn and adapt and classifiers. We showed how, some people want to recognize that somebody's going to be a serial killer in the future. There's a lot of artificial intelligence learning problems, learning software that does speed recognition. When you call the bank or when you call, the gas company, there's usually a speech recognition software. We talk about decision trees and how we can use them to classify something new that we've seen. We talk about forever loops and how sometimes they're good. We want them in operating systems. We want them in thermostats. We want, sometimes we want the forever loops to have forever loops in our program. We talk about reinforcement learning, which is learning by reinforcement and robots. And we said that, I show you a whole bunch of robots and seeing how they're just computers. And then you can kind of motivate the behavior by giving us a certain reward. And this one was about, last one is about a genetic algorithm. And they're a nice summary of all the things that we learned in this class. All right, you can all click for extra credit.